Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 47 of the Backyard Banter podcast. I'm your host, Matt Harmon. We took a little bit of just a quick break there in order for me to launch the Fantasy Hipsters podcast and get that going. But we are back here, episode 47. You know, yeah, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't checked out the Fantasy Hipsters podcast, I'll do a little cross promotion here. And please make sure you go download that on iTunes or on Stitcher or from thebackyardbanter.com. Definitely check that show out. I'm really enjoying doing that with my partner in crime there, Matt Franciscovich, the franchise. But I am also equally excited to be joined by Justin Lanero here tonight on the Backyard Banter podcast. Justin works for Roto Grinders. He's done a podcast, The Fantasy Goodfellas, in the past that I've had the pleasure of coming on quite a few times. So, Justin, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm good, Matt. It's nice to see you. It's nice to talk to you. And, you know, it's been a while.
It has.
The Goodfellas ended after a couple of years. We you know, there's other things in the works right now, but, you know, which is a product of football diehards. Mm. Things are good. Life is good, man. I can't complain. And you're 3,000 miles away, and things look good on your end. I'm excited to talk tonight.
Oh, things look good. Yeah, when you had me turn on the video for this, you know, you get to see the tapestry in the background and the jacket thrown over the closet door there. Living complete and total bachelor life here, which is always great. And you are definitely opposite side of the country, opposite perspective there with married and kids. But it's good. Yep. It's always good to sit down and talk. It's good for the listeners to sit here and join us as well. Justin, you know, I want to dig into what I do with everybody here up at the top and kind of get into your background of sports and, you know, falling in love with football or, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, obviously, you're a big Patriots fan coming from up there in the Northeast. But it's kind of take us back into the background of you as a sports fan.
All right. Well, I can remember going to baseball card shows at 7, 8 years old. And, you know, obviously, I'm from right outside Boston, Matt. And my dad ended up opening a sports memorabilia store when I was 12. It was called Hot Ticket Sports Memorabilia. And he was sick at the time, and but it was one of his something on his bucket list. So he, you know, that was a security alarm. I remember him punching the code, and we would open up shop every day. And he sold everything from Ted Williams fishing reels to Michael Jordan prints to Marshall Faulk rookie cards to Jerry Rice jerseys. It was incredible. So I was, you know, I was engulfed in that stuff at 7, 8, 9, 10, and by 12 years old, you know, I had, you know, a Lou Gehrig signed bat in our presence at one time, wheel and deal stuff. So it was always just there. And then, you, of course, you played sports and you tried to emulate what some of your favorite pros were doing. And yeah, it was right in front of me. And but as far as getting into things, that happened later in life. And, you know, I feel like Twitter, where I met you, it, you know, became, you know, prominent the last few years, and I started doing things for free, endeavors for free, and networking, writing for a site called Fantasy Football Beast House. You might have been at Sportable at the time, and I think there was another place called Fantasy Oasis, and there were just a handful of like people. And I heard your name and Sal, and of course Scott Fish was around, and I joined the Scott Fish Bowl like 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think this would be year 4 or 5, and you just did stuff for free because you wanted to, but you networked. And you kept networking, and that's what I've done. And things have been fantastic. And you know, continue to network. And look at you and I. We talked before the show. It's a beautiful thing. Sig Bloom calls it the golden age. And things are good. Things are good, man. Things are real good. Life is good today.
It is good today. You know, we were talking before the show about just what a wild time it's been with free agency kind of literally like slapping you in the face. And it just does kind of make you think and just be thankful that we get to do this and people are paying attention. You know, no matter what level of compensation or even no compensation you're doing this for, the fact that you can be out there and sharing your opinion and just people are interested in consuming it, that alone is pretty cool. So, but again, it makes you appreciate like that coming up process for you, Justin. Like, what was kind of the moment where you felt like being on Twitter for a while, like you said, networking Was there kind of a moment where you said like, "Oh, this is a big thing. Like, this is something different. Like, I'm taking another step here."
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at. So I mentioned networking because I don't think that you can do enough of it. I mean, look at you and I. I feel like I've known you for years now, and I've just watched you travel 3,000 miles from Virginia, being on a podcast with me too. Now you work at, NFL.com. I mean, the epicenter of all of this, because you're good at what you do. But going back to what I was saying is I'm still old school in the sense where I like the physicality of a fantasy football magazine. I like to bring it to the bathroom. I like to bring it to the beach. And the magazines that I bought and I still buy, I'm now in. In fact, that your colleague Alex Gelhar, we did a draft for the Football Diehards draft book. We're in the same league together. So I think, we become friends with Bob Harris, and this is the man with the plan of Football Diehards. He facilitates all this. Hey, just take a shot in the dark. Could use some of my services. But the podcast thing, we did things for free, or I think we all have done things for free at one point. But the networking, I got a real good rapport with the people at DraftKings, particularly the CEO, Jason Robbins, who's an absolute sweetheart. What can I do for you? How can I help you? Talk about sponsorships and stuff like that. And you get a little bit of confidence. Of course, what we'll talk about later, it helped me out because some of these things that I've always talked about, or reading fantasy football magazines from the beach 15 years ago or 12 years ago, you'd say, wow, doesn't seem like that hard, but wouldn't that be cool to be in it? Now I'm in it. I'm in these magazines formulating my own rankings, which can go horribly wrong in hindsight.
You and me that, both, my friend.
Right. But you do get a couple things right. Like I think I had Zach, the running back for the Lions, as a deep, deep sleeper, like one good game. But I mean, it's a beautiful thing. None of us are making millions of dollars, but to be able to say that, you are being compensated for something that you love, in some facet is fantastic. Because there's some fantastic people in the industry that have been good to me, and I'm very grateful, Matt.
At some point, and I've said this a couple of episodes so far through season two, like at some point I'd like to do a larger field episode about the working for free thing. But you just touched on that, working for free and starting off doing something like that. That always seems to be a big point of discussion in football Twitter or sports media Twitter or whatever. Like occasionally it's just going to spiral into the, like, should you work for free thing? What is your opinion on working for free? Like, because there's the idea of if you're good at something, never do it for free. But at the same time, you've shared that it's kind of a big part of your coming up story.
Well, John Bales just wrote something, and it's a everybody knows who John Bales is, and he's a wizard. Of course, he's an author, and he's been on a podcast with me. I know John. And I'm Dave Richard of CBS. I'm name dropping like crazy, but it's a testament to my networking. Dave Richard, who I've met, who's a friend, I consider a friend, Dave Richard of CBS, has said to me, don't do anything for free. It's easy for somebody that works at a Fortune 500 company to say that to a guy that writes for some small company. But there's got to be a starting point. And that starting point for me was Fantasy Beast House. For you, it was Sportable. And, I did a Stardom Sit'em article and you asked, hey, is there potential for compensation? And then, it didn't work out where I was, or I might've gotten like a $40 check at the end of the year. And the gentleman, Jason Kaz, who's a friend of mine, said, thank you. Thank you. I can't give you any more money. But there it was. And then, podcasting, the podcasting for me is something that I enjoy. I think I'm better vocally than I am at the keyboard or with a pen. So I think there's a starting point. I think the timing of getting into this game was pretty good because, as it's a crowded playing field at this point. I mean, it is crowded. I think it's a beautiful thing that it's crowded because there's a ton of perspective and you can treat it buffet style as far as what you want to absorb. But you do have to pay your dues, Matt Harmon. I think, do you want to? Obviously, you want to be compensated, but, to get to where you want to get, I think that, you see internships. There's internships everywhere. Some of the best companies, nobody's really getting paid, but in the long run, there will probably be some compensation. So you learn, going back to networking, and I think that if you present value to an individual or individuals or a company, then eventually there's going to be some growth for you know, monetary, you know, for compensation.
Yeah, it's all about kind of everybody has to prove themselves to some sort of degree, I would say. It's not always a, it doesn't always work out. It doesn't always turn into some sort of paid gig. I think a lot of people kind of go into those situations saying, like, well, I just have to work hard and it's going to happen. But that's not necessarily always the case. A lot of times it's what do you do to kind of distinguish yourself from the crowd? This might be an awkward question for you to answer, but like, Justin, what do you think it is about you that distinguishes yourself from the crowd of a very crowded field?
Not, again, the timing of all this and the ability for me to network. My friend Jacob Rickroad of RotoViz, who's a good friend of mine, you know, once said to me, you know, nobody networks like you. Now, that's not and look at you and I. I mean, you and I are friends on Facebook. I could name drop till we're both green in the face today with names that everybody's heard of. Colleague of yours, Adam Rank, I talk to all the time. He's a sweetheart. I mean, you network, you have conversations. They don't necessarily have to be fantasy sports conversations or football conversations, life conversations. And then one way or another, you know, you share that fantasy or football component. But I had a successful podcast. We were compensated. We had people, you know, DraftKings was involved and so forth. And in that process, the networking, you just keep kept happening, and it's happening, you know, as we speak. So for me, I think it's a podcasting thing. Again, going back to my tongue, maybe sometimes I talk too much. I'm definitely not Mark Twain or Charles Dickens, and I can't write like Matt Harmon or some of these, you know, I mean, some of the writers that we see. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's a beautiful thing for me. It's been podcasting, and eventually, I would love to, you know, have a bit on Sirius XM radio down the road. I'm not pursuing it heavily at this moment, but I don't think that that's unattainable by any means.
The networking thing is so fascinating, and I'll ask you this because, quite frankly, I think I'm kind of a bad networker. Some people might disagree or this, that, or the other, but I definitely don't think networking is my strength. How do you network without being annoying? That is a question I think I always.
Well, you're going to have. Well, I mean, I'm going to. You know, we're doing your show, so I'm going to. When I wrote for Fantasy Football Beast House, actually, no, it was FakePigskin.com. So I was with Fake Pigskin, and I started to interview people. Bloom was one of them. Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg, Nathan Zagura, and Evan Silva. And I was a real pain in the ass. I was newly sober, but this became like almost my. It was a hobby, but I was, wow, you're talking to some of these people that you read about all the time. And you can really piss somebody off. And there's no question there's people that aren't crazy about me. You know, the great Evan Silva, I think I was overly aggressive with him. He did a podcast with one of my first podcasts, which was years ago. And I retweet this for me. Please retweet. And it was great. He retweeted from the Roto World's handle, all of them. I have his phone number, and I'm like, hey, will you do it again? And he probably got tired of my nonsense. So, that was years ago. You chalk it up, but you're right. You can certainly be a pain in the ass, an overly aggressive pain in the ass. But for every Evan Silva that doesn't like me, I think that I've formed five or six relationships with the Matt Harmons of the world you're not everybody's going to like you. And then at that point in my life, you know, things where I was green, like they say in the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was newly, you know, so I was adapting to life, and we'll get into that later on. But yeah, you can certainly be a pain in the ass, but I have no fear. It's like a girl at a club or a bar back in the day. You can't have that worry about getting shut down. You know, initiation is half the battle.
Yeah, you can sometimes though.
It's right. But, you know, there's going to be somebody else in that room. So, but nothing ventured, nothing gained.
I suppose that's true. And yeah, I think with networking and everything, you kind of have to accept that, like, it's not always going to work, or what works with one person is not going to work with everybody else. It's hard for some people, like myself, to accept that sometimes, but, it's just part of the process. I think one thing I'd like to kind of pick your brain on a little bit is like how, because you've kind of taken a nice little big step here in the last year, I would say, you know, from doing what you were doing before, not just in the publications, but also just now you've got a little blue check on your name there, Justin, on Twitter. You know, you're with Roto Grinders and everything. How did that kind of come to be? How did you become the, what is it? You're the manager of at Roto Grinders. It's a nice little title. How did that come?
They decided to implement the, so fantasy DFS football is the biggest DFS sport. Everybody knows that. Everybody loves football. And it was time for Roto Grinders to have a football handle. Now they have news for the NBA, golf, but football is something that you have to, there's a level of seriousness you got to put into it. And that, and there you go. The people at Roto Grinders, and there's a long list of them out of Nashville, and they've been good to me. So here I am. You tweet football news. Of course, it's been a slow period today. Things are picking up, and they will. Football's 365, as you know, Matt Harmon. And here we are. So I have I have an assistant, John Kelly, who is an absolute sweetheart. Helps me out with the tweets during the football season. Naturally, it's busier. You can't talk about daily fantasy sports in the middle of March or early March or April. But there are things that are pertinent down the road. I mean, the draft's going to be coming up, and these names that are going to be drafted will have relevance in September and October, you know, depending on some of their landing spots and so forth. But still with footballdiehards.com, Bob Harris at the helm. We all know who he is, one of the godfathers of the game. I do a weekly article during the season for them, but they've been absolutely fantastic. And Roto Grinders, in my opinion, is the epicenter of daily fantasy sports. So I'm grateful to be there. They've kind of handed me the keys from a football standpoint. Said, hey, just do what you have to do with this Twitter handle. It's yours. There's a level of being careful. But Matthew Berry follows us. It's amazing when you look at the list of our followers. Wow, so you have to be careful what you say on Twitter, as I've learned in the last week or so. Some of the politics, you have to be careful because Twitter, for like a guy like you and I, even though I don't work for the NFL Network or NFL.com, you got to be careful what you say because it's easy to forget who's following you and what the hell you're tweeting out. You could lose followers. So I got the blue check mark. That's cool. I'm just another bozo on the bus as far as I'm concerned. I think it gives you a little more credibility, so to speak. Not that anybody wants to impersonate Justin Lanero by any stretch. But, hey, things are good, man. And again, I can't be more happier to represent a place like footballdiaries.com, who's been around since before you were born, maybe just around when I was a toddler. And then Roto Grinders, which is the Ferrari of daily fantasy sports.
You mentioned Twitter, and, you talk about losing losing followers. You tweet the wrong thing. If you work for a certain company, you could lose your job. That's happened before. People have definitely tweeted some stupid thoughts, and or maybe some really controversial, just things they should probably not touch on. And in today's climate, politically, and just at a time where our nation does just feel so divided, our world feels so divided, it's hard to navigate that sometimes. Has there ever been a moment for you where you've tweeted something that like got you in trouble, or you mentioned that you can feel free to not share
Yesterday, Mike Clayon followed me. So I said, why'd you do that? He said, because I'm here for football. But I needed to hear that. Oh. I needed to hear that. I'm here for football. And we talked, and then I was he refollowed me. But that makes you scratch your head for a couple seconds because you're going, Jesus, Justin, you got to be cool. I mean, you can't be letting people like Mike Clay, who's a goat, one of the goats in our industry, Matt, unfollow you because of something stupid. And it was something stupid, but you can't, you got to kind of try to control that. I mean, it's happened then, but this was just yesterday. And then you have to you got to be careful what you say and where you say it because, and that's a perfect example right there. So let's put it this way. I've lost a couple hundred followers in the last couple months, but probably none bigger than Mike Clay. I think that's fitting for tonight's show. But he's back.
Well, that's good. It's good you got him back on the train. Mike's got to come on the show at some point. That's somebody that's got to be a guest.
You've great guy.
You've shared a lot of names here, some that have been on the show and some that are definitely on the spreadsheet to be upcoming guests. But so Justin, I kind of we're about 20 minutes give or take here, and I kind of want to redirect us to sort of the real. I mean, obviously, I'd love to talk about your job and fantasy and this, that, and all the other. But the real reason I wanted to have you on tonight, and it's actually kind of fitting because given in the football world, there's actually a bit of news about it. But I do want to talk about your past with alcohol and being. Is it appropriate to say a recovering alcoholic? Is that the actual thing to say?
Yeah.
Or is it just, okay, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say the wrong thing here, but so I kind of want to dig into that part of your story. Could you take us back to kind of like the beginning of that? Like, when did you realize that you might not be the normal drinker?
Well, we talked about my dad, and I lost him right after my 17th birthday in 99. So I was kind of like derailed, not a boy, but not a man. And we had a big house and I had a couple dogs. And my house was the place to chill. So there wasn't a lot of rules and regulations, so to speak. But by that time, I had already been, drunk a number of times. Just at this point, you're going to numb all the hurt that you have. And what better than a drink? I loved marijuana for a long time. In fact, I can remember going to Jamaica twice in 1 year when I was 8. Right after he died, I went to Jamaica twice in 1 year, and I had some peep connections down there in Negril, Jamaica, and we were. But the funny thing about it is you obviously marijuana is. It is what it is in Jamaica. It grows regularly, and of course you're going to do that when you go down there. But I can remember being at my Packard Bell computer from the office and looking on the menu of this little dive down in, I don't know if it's still there, it's called the Thatch Hut, and all these drinks. And that's what was on my mind at that age, at 18. So instead of like the fun stuff, like going to the beach, I was concerned as to what was going to be on the menu and what I could indulge in at the age of 18. You know, forget about the marijuana, forget about the cuisine, the jerk chicken and stuff like that. I'm concerned about the banana daiquiri because I like the way alcohol made me feel. That is addiction. That is addiction, and it's unrecognized at that point in time. But yeah, my 20s were a blur. I was a daily drinker, 10, 12 nips of awful vodka with Red Bull. And, I did a lot of things that were embarrassing. And I'm ashamed of, by the grace of God, I'm in one piece, but I've hurt a lot of people on the way. But at 30, I'll never forget, 2013, somebody suggested that I go to a meeting and it was time to figure out what was wrong. It was time to figure out why I was drinking, a big bottle of Captain Morgan's, and then that was gone by 8, and then I'd have to go back to the liquor store and get another one. But I was able to drive, like, enough booze to get an elephant shit-faced. And it's not touching me, but that's the tolerance. So you went from the kid that was the baby at the party at maybe 16, took a shot and passed out, to the kid that – and then slowly it's a progressive disease, as they say. So I had to sit in a classroom, which is AA, there's thousands, and it's a worldwide network at this point, and they're in every corner, different times, and you need to hear about yourself from other people and their trials and tribulations. And April 2nd will be 4 years, which is incredible, since I've had a drink. We keep it one day at a time. You keep it one day at a time, but the reality of it is and when I share in April 2nd, I'll share in a room and you talk about how bad it was, how things got and how things are now. Life is by no stretch perfect, but I don't have to rely on that Captain Morgan's or the 12 vodka nips at this point in time. And I'm a firm believer that, where I am sober, you know, some of these fantasy football doors and stuff have opened up, because if I'm drinking, I'm probably not talking to Matt Harmon. I'm not having this conversation with you. I'm certainly not managing a football handle for a notable company in football. It just, life gets better. But yeah, man, it's a touchy subject. I can talk to you for hours about it, but being sober, and I know, obviously you did that thing that was featured on CNN with the weight, and that'll be my next thing, because alcoholics have some type of sugar addiction. So my new addiction is like brownies, and I know you're anti peanut butter, but Coca-Cola, and I rationalize it by, you know, as I sip a small Coke tonight, I go, well, it's not alcohol, but that's the alcoholic mind telling me, all right, you can have Coke even though it's awful for you. And it's true, it is better than booze. Going slow, Matt, going one day at a time. And it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good. Here I am. Look at me talking to you on a Thursday night. Yeah. I mean, people want to be looking at you, talking to the Matt Harmon. I can't complain, man. You know, I really can't. A lot of people have it worse. I'm grateful.
I think one thing that is always, you know, said about addiction or anything of that nature, like, is you kind of have to hit that, you know, rock bottom or whatever. And mm-hmm. I can speak personally, you know, suffering from like depression and everything. My moment was definitely, I had to hit a rock bottom too. And I now in hindsight say, like, yeah, I was a broken person. I was my house was a broken foundation, and I couldn't just paint the shutters to get by. I had to tear the whole house down and rebuild the mm-hmm. whole damn thing. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment in time or like a specific instance when you kind of hit that rock bottom, and how did you respond to it?
Probably 100 times we've woken up hungover and said, I'm not doing this again. Or what did I say last night? Or my phone's broken, or the TV's on top, you know, somehow the flat screen's in half, or you pissed your mattress or something like that, but you just don't get it. You're thinking short term there. Something eventually, and you talk about rock bottoms, and some of the bottoms are definitely deeper than others. And I was great in the sense where there were no arrests. There were a lot of fights, and there were some despicable things that went on in my drinking career, as you say. But you have to and a lot of people will say this, you know, and there are different, you know, avenues to explore when trying to, you know, become a better person. And for me, it was Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, you sit in that atmosphere, and people have this, you see it on movies and everybody cracks on it. Oh, look at it. You're sitting in a room full of wisdom with years and years and years of sobriety, and people have gone through trials and tribulations, hard times, deaths, you know, serious stuff. And they haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink over any of that, you know, really, really bad things. Bankruptcy and again death and stuff like that, and you say to yourself, wow, that guy's 80 years old, why does he's been sober for 40 years, why does he keep showing up? And the reason is because he doesn't want to forget what it was like the day before he got there, you know, in 1971 or whatever, because it can easily unravel at the blink of an eye if you talk to other alcoholics. I have a sponsor who's a police officer. He's a gem, you know. If I have a bad day or something, I talk to him, he can relate to, you know, these things. You don't have to do it together. So it's been a beautiful thing. There's all types of literature that, you know, I read period, you know, from time to time. Probably should read more. But the meetings, it's like any other class. You know, there's donuts and coffee and stuff like that. But you just sit there, and you know me, Matt. I like to talk. You sit there, listen. You absorb that information. You need to hear things that are yeah, every single meeting, and I've probably been in hundreds at this point, you know, gather a small piece of information. You don't maybe all these meetings, but something small, and you go, wow, that was me. Are you kidding me? I can remember doing that. I can remember hiding the bottle of vodka because I didn't want somebody to know how much I was drinking. I can remember shifting liquor stores because I didn't want the clerk to think I drank too much. So I would mix them up in the neighborhood. I would go to this one on Tuesday and this one. You weren't hiding it from anybody. And But as far as rock bottom, yeah, I mean, you know, you're done hurting people, upsetting people, being a bad employee, a bad parent, a bad son. And the goal here for me, even though life isn't perfect, is to show up, to try to show up for life, to try to be a decent, you know, decent individual, you know, honest, you know, somebody with some type of value in society. Because if I'm drinking, you know, and as most alcoholics would say, then you're no good to anybody, because you're reliant on that, then where the next drink or drug is coming from. And you don't give a shit about anybody but that, because you got to go by any means necessary. You have to get that. And I was at that point, Matt. But the desire, now you can get 5 DUIs, you can do 5 years in prison, but if you are not ready, either, you know, it's pretty simple. You're either done or you're not done. And, you know, and it's that simple. And, you know, see people come in, you see people go out, see people with long-term sobriety pick up a drink after 30 years, and you wonder why. But, you know, you got to be done. And something, you know, talk about how you'll hear the word higher power. I can't really tell you whether it's the cat or something at some point in time in 2013. I might have bumped my head, said, look, enough is enough. You know, your body can only take so much. You know, the liver is forgiving. You're a pig. But today, you know, I try not to worry about any of that. I go one day at a time, man.
You talk about the whole community aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's, you know, we're a part of a great community as sports media and Twitter and everything like that. You know, it's another phase of community. I would imagine that being around people that are sharing in similar struggles with you and everything, that it kind of does really have to be the key, right? I mean, it's something that you absolutely can't do alone.
No, and you don't have to do it alone. That's the beauty of it. And people emphasize that all the time. When you go into these meetings, there's usually somebody who just decided to stop. They're in the denial aisle, the back of the room, they call it. And they sit, you know, with the last chair in the back of the room. And these atmospheres are not glamorous by any stretch. They're churches and basements. But there's always coffee and donuts. And there's usually a happy crowd because most of them are sober. And they're doing better today than they were doing 5, 10, 15 years ago because they don't drink. So you do feel right at home. And when I go like a week or two without a meeting, I feel it. I mean, my fiance would tell you, you know, you're a dink. You can be a dink or go to a meeting, you know, because you're gaining every single meeting I go to. You come back and you feel a little better than you did before you went in because you heard what you needed to hear. It might have been bad. It might have been, you know, so-and-so got arrested or so-and-so went or so-and-so died. At this point, I know quite a bit of people that have died and because they couldn't grasp the simple concept of not – look, you can't drink. You can't drink. You're allergic to it. You have an allergy to it. You know, you do bad things. It's going to catch up to you. And it has to a lot of people. So you collect this information, you know, and you remember these. I'm sure I've said a bunch of slogans tonight nonchalantly that I didn't make these things up. I've heard them along the way, and they kind of stick to you. But being, and that's why you have a sponsor. So my sponsor, you know, I'll call him. He can relate because he has that disease. He know what it's like. He knows what it's like to have an addiction to vodka and be an asshole when he drinks. You know, pardon my French. You can edit all this out. It's coming at you raw.
It's all good. We do have the explicit tag here on the iTunes for a reason, just in case we get real.
Oh, good, good. Well, good. Yeah, so but going back to the community thing, absolutely, absolutely. Because and I will say this: no brothers or sisters growing up. A tight core of friends. My friends, 20, 25 years. But when Justin Lanero decided to quit drinking 4 years ago, he's not that guy anymore that goes out and and you're invited out and you don't put yourself in some of these atmospheres that you once were in. Not because I'm going to drink, just because I choose not to be in an environment where there's booze and nonsense everywhere. So, but life is better today, Matt Harmon, because I don't drink. I wish I had your frame and physique, and I was making broccoli sandwiches. And one more thing before, you know, this is obviously your show. I find eating healthy at this point in time, like I'm drinking a Coke right now, and it's been more hard than for me not to stay away from a drink or drug. Like the eating thing is unbelievable.
Well, and if we can, I mean, we can hit on that real quick because obviously it's a big part of my past. I mean, you can be addicted to food just as much as you are addicted to alcohol or addicted to, you know, drugs or whatever. I mean, it's not the same sort of chemical reaction inside of you, but or maybe for some people it is, but it's also because it's less stigmatized too that's why it's harder to quit. You know, it's not that it's easy, but you know, to be the unhealthy or overweight friend is much less destructive. Like I've never specifically hurt anybody probably other than my mother for worrying, you know, because of my eating or whatever. But when you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, like you're going to hurt some people. You're going to hurt people. You're going to take from people. It's a little bit different when you're eating, but, it's a challenge. It's not easy. My path wasn't easy, and it hasn't been a clear, you know, upward trajectory. There's been peaks and valleys, and it took years and years and years to get started. And it is every day. It is still, I'm on a specific like workout plan right now, and I asked myself today, I'm like, am I even making any progress? And then it's like you said, it's one day at a time, and it's you know, it's looking back and thinking like, all right, it's just been 2 weeks I've been on this plan. Let's wait to get to the end of the 7 weeks, and then we'll be where we are. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge just like any other thing, but I can relate. It is hard. Justin, I want to ask you three more questions on this subject. One, the start, a little easier than the last two I plan on asking, but so how did you getting sober lead you to the fantasy football community, or was there a sort of you kind of made it sound earlier, like a little bit of a seamless sort of transition there. What effect did that have?
So it's always, I mean, for guys like you and I mean, it's always been something that we've done, right? I mean, you buy magazines, you play in home leagues, you play in dynasty leagues. Now you want to be a little like not higher than that. I don't want to say higher than that, but like you want to write some of this stuff. You want to talk about some. You want a platform. And going back to networking, you have, like, I'm friends with a guy like Bob Harris on Facebook. I mean, who better than to be friends with than a guy that is the, you know, senior editor for a company that's been around for 25 years. So some of the confidence that I lacked because I was a pig drinker, you know, it was maybe regained a little bit. And now it's time to pursue something that you love and you might have cold feet with. So, I mean, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it's a shot in the dark. Could you use me? Can I, you know, being an alcoholic, I think there's a lot of layers of like fear and stuff like that, you know, buried within you because you've been masking it for so long with a drink. So now it's time to kind of relearn life and do some of the things that you've always dreamt about doing.
Would you say there's something of almost like a self-loathing aspect to it too, when you know you're in this dark, because I can speak to that from being overweight. When you know that you have a problem and everybody can see that you have a problem, you're much less likely to put yourself out there. You're much less likely to approach if you're mired in alcoholism, you know, for you, you're much less likely to approach a Bob Harris. Or for me, if I was overweight, I'm much less likely to be like, oh my God, Sigmund Bloom just said that there's an opening at football, guys. I gotta go get that. You know, it's not a fix all, but it's a little bit more confidence that you have.
Right. And we have social media. I had AOL growing up, so there were means to communicate with people. But, you know, my drinking led me to a dark place. And that place was a couch. You know, I was no longer welcome at the local bars because I was a dink. And I could also drink as much as I wanted without being judged from a chair in a dark room And the concern was whether or not I had enough ice cubes and cigarettes. That's where my priorities were at. So, you know, when that, and towards the end of my drinking, I'm like, you know what, I want to make a Facebook page. And it was something, I named it something stupid. There was no, didn't pick up any steam or tread. And that kind of faded. And then I asked a kid if I could be on, or Fake Pigskin was asking, like, is it podcasting? And then I was turned down by a couple people. They were like, ah, we'll get back to you. And here we are. But just, you know, I cannot reiterate that the networking component, and obviously social media helps, right? I mean, we're, but you throw these darts out there, feeler bets, you know, if we're going to make a poker analysis to see where everybody else is at, and people are going to say no to you. And that's acceptance. You know, tie that into the alcoholism. You know, there's a difference between the first thing you have to do is accept that you're an alcoholic. It's a tough thing to say. I didn't say it for the first few meetings I was at. You just go around the room while everybody's introducing themselves. I'm Justin. So now I can say, my name is Justin. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's what I am. There's no two ways about it. I mean, it's what I am. I've heard my story by a million other people. And they've told me, you know, so, yeah, so it's. But, you know, again, nothing ventured, nothing gained. And there's that level of confidence that, and you're going to get shut down. I mean, I've had people say, sorry, man, or, you know, but you got to just keep. You're not going to let it wear you down. I mean, look at you, for instance. I mean, obviously we're here to talk about me, but if you look at your road, I don't know. You know, I remember Matt Harmon with like 400 Twitter followers, but there was something special about you. I mean, you're a go-getter. And look at you now in Los Angeles with your dog.
Well, especially, yeah, the dog is the key component. I really appreciate that. I think I had the dog before we really, I don't think I had the dog, but that just shows you how long we've been talking. I don't think I even had Charlie during our like early correspondence, but it's a beautiful thing, man. This, the long time connections you make in this industry. But Justin, kind of to close down on this topic, and I, for one, really appreciate you being so open and talking about this with me and letting the listeners tune in as well. If you could reach out and talk to somebody that is an addict, but they haven't got to that point yet where they're ready to fight it, or if they're ready to go to a meeting, what would you say to that person?
I would say that I would say, here's my phone number, and I can tell you what I know and what I've gathered in the last 3 or so years. I would say to this person, where if you think you have a problem, there's a chance that you might have a problem. There are meetings everywhere, and they are a beautiful thing. They're not always in the most glorious places, like I said, but life can, you know, life, it will get better. It's not, there's no two ways about it where, yeah, I mean, life is life. And that's the thing. But there's nothing, a substance, you know, whether it's heroin or cocaine or the marijuana maintenance program, they call it, an AA, that's going to make any issue you have better by a substance. If you stop drinking or smoking, you know, in time, gradually, things are going to get better in your life. But you got to be ready, man. It goes back to what I'm saying. You can lead a horse to water, can't make him drink, and it's an addiction. There's no two ways about it. People, you know, they call it a disease. I mean, it's a spiritual disease. I mean, you become fixated on when you're going to get that next drink. So from a physical standpoint, yeah, there's tremors tied to it when you quit drinking and the shakes, and some people have seizures. But, you know, it's more of a mind over matter thing, in my opinion, where you need to be done. And if you stick around and you listen to some of these savvy old timers, which I kind of gravitated towards, you know, the OGs of the game, so to speak, and listen to what they have to say, then you're going to find out sooner than later, you know, that things can get better and you can go on to live a decent life and not finding it necessary to indulge in some of these substances that we've talked about.
And lastly, and this is kind of a maybe peculiar thing for you to do, so feel free if it's weird to shoot me down, but if Justin Lanero of 2017 could talk to Justin Lanero of 2012, you know, before going down this journey, what would you say to yourself?
Wow. Well, I think I always knew I had a problem. I just wasn't ready. And I think at the age of 30, I had seen it and I had done it. You know, Jamaica twice at 18. I can remember being in Jamaica for 15 minutes and I had a case of Red Stripe on my head walking down the street. And I had, it was just crazy. So I kind of like got in the game early and I got exited the game early. But I would probably tell that person, when you're ready, we're always really methodical. You never really attack somebody you think isn't a problem, even though you want to yell and scream at them. When you're ready, I'll be here waiting. And, I have friends, childhood friends that are probably going to come around at one point or another that may or may not need help. But, that's a fantastic question. But I would be empathetic. I would be sympathetic to that person. I wouldn't be rough around the edges. And I would try to instill, the information that I've gathered in the last almost 4 years into, Justin Lair of 2012, and hope and pray that, that he listens. And the reality is, and these are numbers here, between six and seven people out of 100, comprehend this and are able to just, stop drinking and put it away. I mean, that's how powerful this stuff is. So it's not, you're a long shot to begin with, but the key is that, having a conversation like this tonight. And I think like a goal for you and certainly a goal for me is to, you want to help people, not just alcoholics, but that's why we're all here. As far as I'm concerned, you try to help somebody. So that's a fantastic question, but I certainly have more knowledge today regarding alcoholism than I did in 2012.
Well, that's for sure. And Justin, again, thanks so much for really deep diving on this topic. I know we've talked about doing this show together for a long time. Mm-hmm. And just as your friend, I want to say that I'm really proud of you for coming this far and really just happy to see you in such a good place. It's awesome, man. And yeah, like you said, we're friends on Facebook, follow each other on Twitter. Yeah, it's all cool, man. So kind of winding down here at the end of the show, you've made a lot of progress in your career, but you mentioned the writing for a publication. What is it like to see your own name in print in a magazine that like you used to read? And also, do you think that like, what is it about that that makes it more special for you than seeing it on like a website or something?
It brings you back. I was looking at pictures the other day of it might have been a Football Diehards magazine from 2010 or 2011. It was like a pool setting. And there was a Corona sitting on the magazine. It had to. My guess would be it was June or July. This is before I stopped drinking. And so now you're in magazines that you used to read. Football Diehard has been around for 25 years. So I could not wait. Sometimes it would be late May, early June. These magazines would come up, but I'd go to Barnes & Noble's. They weren't in. They'd go back the next week. Now you're actually in the magazine. So I guess as an alcoholic, we talk about like, we have character defects. So like the self-centeredness and the arrogance kind of creeps in, like, hey, I'm in that magazine. Nobody cares. Not like you're a millionaire or you're Kanye West getting millions thrown at you. But I think you can give yourself a pat in the back to a degree saying, wow, people are going to spend $7 on this magazine. They may or may not believe anything that you put in this magazine, but you're still in this magazine that's, that was printed with, some of the industry's greats. So it makes it real. And even though a lot of people at this point in time, Matt Harmon, think that magazines are obsolete, and I'll say it till the day I die, I love, physicality of flipping the pages, on the beach, in the bathroom. It's a beautiful thing. There's no question about it. In fact, I got a box of them in the bedroom. And I'll be able to tell Easton, my 3-year-old, when he plays fantasy football, because he will play fantasy football. I don't care if he plays fantasy football, but if he does, your father in 2015 had, you know, these were his rankings. It's pretty damn cool, man. I mean, it's probably not as cool as moving to LA and working for NFL.com, but let me say something about you real quick.
It's all relative, man. It's all relative.
Oh yeah, no doubt. But you're one of you. I mentioned helping people, and not that I mean, you have never, like, every time somebody asks you a question, you always answer them. You do podcasts. It's incredible. It's an incredible, you know, trait of yours, and I think that's commendable. People know Matt Harmon, the football. You know, you do your own thing. You have your own website, and you work at NFL.com. But you know, you help people. You're willing to answer questions, and I think on a small level that can help somebody too. I mean, with your following, and you know, somebody. Wow, Matt, I met somebody, a buddy of mine at the grocery store. I'm now friends with kid Nick, and the clerk. Oh, he was putting groceries away, and I tell him, throw your name around and throw like Adam Levitan's name around. You know these guys? And, yeah. And you're 3,000 miles away. This guy reads Matt Harmon. This is just a kid that works at the grocery store. Great kid. Because you're willing to help people, you answer their questions, and you're everywhere.
Well, that's really cool to hear. And I mean, I just do what I can because, like we've mentioned here many times, it's all about that community that makes you and brings you up. And it's, you got to give a little bit back to it. Well, Justin, I really want to thank you again so much for coming on tonight. This has been a fantastic discussion, as I knew it would be. You know, as you know, listening to the show, I always give the guest one last shot at the floor before I yank it out from under you and we close up and get out of here. So any parting shots before we go, the floor is yours.
Shout outs? Is that what you said?
Just the parting shots. You know, the floor is yours before we get out of here.
Yeah, no, man. I mean, this was serious. You know, and as much as I love to talk about football, I could talk about the not drinking thing all the time because it stems from that. You know, without me not drinking, right? And this sounds redundant, and maybe some of this has been. I'm not talking to Matt Harmon today. I'm not on Twitter with 3,400 Twitter followers. I don't have these conversations with my sobriety and the fact that I don't drink. Am I perfect? No, by any means. I have a lot of growing up to do. Just ask the girl in the next bedroom. She'll tell you. But I'm at this point in time, you know, I'm grateful to my football diehards family and the Roto Grinders family. Those guys have been fantastic to me. It's look at this, you know, me, Matt Harmon, Thursday night, you know, and not even talking about football. And I'm okay with that because there's going to be plenty of football to be talked about, you know, from today to first week of September or so. It's a beautiful thing. Our friend Sig Bloom calls it the golden age. Look at us. I mean, it's just – how eloquent is that? The golden age. No. I can hear him saying that.
That is it's a very Bloom thing to say, but you're right. This has been great. I love getting to know so many different people just beyond the football thing. It's great. It's definitely a passion of mine, and that's why I love doing this show. And speaking of this show, thank you, everybody, that's tuned in today and listened. You can you can tune in, and every week or so we'll be putting these out. We'll get great guests like Justin who come on and share a perspective. And again, we definitely want to extend a debt of gratitude to Justin for coming on and sharing such a personal and real aspect. So for everybody listening out there, of course, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can leave a rating. You can leave a review. Please do those sort of things so that we can continue to get more people in here listening to these inspiring stories like Justin's provided. And, you know, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell everybody that needs a little bit of inspiration about the Backyard Banter podcast. So I really appreciate everybody tuning in and listening. And I hope you learned something today.